Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, hello, everybody. We welcome you back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us today. It's also a delight for us because Carol Langford of Langford Leadership is back with us. She is a highly rated, a very, very well-known executive coach based in New York City. And we had a wonderful conversation a week ago when she was here. And it was all about her philosophy, how she runs her company, and what got her into this field to begin with, which is something we didn't really cover very much. A long time when, you know, often when we talk to executive coaches, we really explore their background to find out what got them into the field to begin with. And we hear some really rather amazing stories on what prompted people to become executive coaches and to help others. And it really explain what they do to help others become more successful in their profession or in their life. As you know, there are coaches out there who can help you with every aspect of your life, be it your business, your relationship with your family, or whatever. There are even grief counselors and coaches who can help you. So anyway, it's a real pleasure for us to welcome Carol Langford back again. She's based in New York, as I pointed out. Carol, we talked with you last week. We learned a good bit about your business. We're going to go into it more today a little bit later. But let me ask you, what was it that inspired you originally to get into this field of executive coaching and to help others in their careers? How did that happen?
Well, it's, you know, sometimes these things are a little bit mysterious. And I have to say, I was teaching at the public university at the time, and I was very, very happy in that career path. I love the idea of public education as one of the great democratizers of our society. And the more people are educated, the more they are uplifted and given opportunity to follow their gifts and their life calling, I think the better society that we have. So I was quite happy in that career path. But I'll tell you what happened. This is a story. I was attending a lecture. I was waiting for a friend. So I was waiting in the vestibule of the place where the lecture was occurring. And someone else was waiting for a friend who was also standing in the vestibule. And that person struck up a conversation with me. It was a woman who became a friend. And she began to ask me a little bit about my background, and I told her that I had been a business owner, that I had helped start a high school, a public high school in Northern Virginia, that I had acted in the theater, the professional theater for 10 years. And so I was just sharing my background. And she said, you know, you've got an amazing background that would be a really good fit for the work that I do with the company that she worked with. And I said, oh, she goes, would you be willing to have breakfast with me and just hear a little bit more about this company? I'd like to talk to you about it. So I said, okay. And we made a breakfast date. And she shared with me the story of this executive coaching work that she was doing. And I'll tell you what really interested me, because what she described was a place, a vocational path, where helping people reach their potential intersects with businesses creating outcomes, products, services that serve their constituents, that make the world a better place. So that combination of helping people who work in businesses fulfill the intentions of the businesses to make the world a better place, those two elements coming together were a little bit irresistible for me. I just said, this sounds like this could be a next step for myself. And I have to tell you, it was really interesting at the time because I remember walking, I'm very lucky, I live in Park Slope, Brooklyn, New York City. I've been here a long, long time. I came here to go to graduate school. New York University Tisch School of the Arts.
Yeah.
So I had the good fortune of being able to walk to the university from my home. And I remember walking to the university, and I would always be excited about what I was going to teach. But there were these days when I kept this idea of executive coaching kept coming into my mind. And that's what I meant by the mystery when I started to answer your question. You know, it came into my mind. It said executive coaching. And I thought to myself, well, what's that about? Why is that coming into my mind? And little did I know, but there was something about my future that was already calling to me at that time. And there at that breakfast, I got really inspired by the work. And I said, yes, I'd like to interview for the job. And by golly, within 2 weeks, I was hired full-time to work for this organizational development training company in the corporate sector. And that's kind of how it happened. How does that sound, Doug? Does that make sense?
Well,
do you have questions?
It sounds fascinating to me that this is something you would be that interested in. I mean, your background is so unique. Your education, including the fact, I know you mentioned, of course, you have you graduated from the Tisch School of the Arts. You've studied this field of coaching. You've gotten into it, you know, quite extensively.
Oh my gosh!
But there are other aspects of your background. For example, you're also an ordained minister. Does that play any role in what you do?
Well, I have to say my spiritual journey is a very, very it's really the centerpiece of my life. It's the most important aspect of my life. And again, I was raised in the Christian faith, and I'm very, very happy to say that the church that my mother brought us to was a very good one. I never, ever heard any of the hellfire and brimstone punishing aspect of religion. I never saw that. My exposure to Christianity was all about love, care for others, forgiveness. It really was full of the elevated values for enhancing human experience. So I was very fortunate in that way. And that was just something that lived in me in a very, very profound way as a little kid. I just felt connected to those teachings. So in the largest context, again, this is I'm not institutionally religious, but in fact, oh, this is interesting. When I was in college, you know, I told you I was raised in the Christian philosophy, and in college, I took a class in the religions of the world. But I'll tell you something, Doug, the motivation for taking that class, you know, nobody told me that Christianity was the only way to find fulfillment and union with a God of whatever God means to someone or spirit. But I said, you know, it sort of seems like that's what people mean. So I took this class to find out. Here was the intention of my taking the class. I was going to find out what were the limitations of all the other religious traditions. So we started reading the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran, the Upanishads. And guess what I found out, Doug? That's what I found out as I started reading those texts.
Yeah.
I found out that they were all saying the same thing in different ways, with different stories, with a slightly different cultural influence. And it was a profoundly moving moment of discovery in my life. It opened my mind, my heart, my entire soul when I discovered that the path to whatever individuals may experience as meaning or fulfillment or connection to their own spirituality, their own higher truth, that there are many, many, there are countless paths to reach that kind of union with oneself, union with a higher truth. However people want to describe that, there are infinite paths to achieving that. And it was one of the great liberations in my life. Now, I still appreciated the faith that I was brought up in. And, you know, I'll tell you, a lot of people asked me if I would conduct wedding ceremonies for them. And I was also interested in the faith. So
yeah.
Yes, I studied with a place. It was called the Center for Soulful Living, and it was an in-depth study of the various religious traditions. It's an interfaith ministry ordination that I have. And yes, I have conducted a number of weddings and happily did so. Does that answer your question as to how I became an ordained minister?
To a degree, yes, it does. it's fascinating to me. I think your background, what you have learned and the studies you've had, I can see where that has been absolutely amazing for you. And I've got to believe it helped you in every aspect of your life. You've learned things that most people don't, that they don't dwell on or really don't take an interest in or learn anything about it. Good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but also want to know about your background in the world of the theater, voice and diction, whether that plays a role in what you do as an executive coach.
Oh.
How does that come out in
that? Yes. Well, you know, I was active in the theater for about 10 to 12 years. It was an incredibly important period in my life. It has shaped me into the person that I am, and it gave me so many skills and tools that served me in the executive coaching space. You bet. It was very interesting because, yeah.
I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to ask, did you intend at some point to become a working actress? Was that your reason for studying this field?
No, this is so funny. Here's the story. This is a true story.
Yeah.
I was teaching. I was a high school English teacher, and I was very happily teaching English, five classes a day, freshmen, juniors, seniors, advanced placement seniors, and I loved it. But I thought there was, after 2 years, I said, maybe I'd like to specialize. And I really love stories. I really love the theater. And I said, maybe I would like to teach the theater. So I said, well, you know, I should find out more about theater and acting if I'm going to teach that someday. So by golly, I was living in the Northern Virginia area right outside of Washington, D.C. at the time. And I said, if I'm going to find out about the theater, I want to find out from the very, very best people possible. So that were... those were the actors at the Arena Stage Theater Company, Hala Wines, Stanley Anderson, and Mark Hammer. They were famous in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yes, they were. Highly regarded.
Workshop. Oh, you remember them. Oh, my God.
Right.
Well, they were holding a summer advanced acting workshop, and I saw it advertised. This is a long time ago. It was in the newspaper. I saw it advertised in the newspaper, and I said, that's what I should take. But here's the funny thing. It was advertised for advanced students and beginning professionals. I think I acted in a play in high school. It was Hello, Dolly. I did that, but I hadn't really acted besides that. So,
Good for you.
I said, you know, I got nothing to lose here. I'm going to go audition for this workshop this summer because I wasn't teaching. It was off for the summer. Well, I was reading a novel at the time. It was a novel called The Thorn Birds. And it was a beautifully written novel, but I chose one of the main characters' speeches for my audition material. You know, so I didn't choose Shakespeare. I didn't choose Tennessee Williams. I didn't choose any of those playwrights that you might expect. So I go in, and I'm it's 100% instinct, right? I have no training. I do the audition. And the three of them, Mark Hammer, Hala Wines, and Stanley Anderson, looked at me. They were sort of dumbfounded. And they said, Mark Hammer said to me, he said, well, that was quite good. That was quite good. He said, I'm wondering, what did that speech come from? What play is that from? I said, oh, it's not from a play. It's from a novel that I'm reading. And they laughed. Well, by golly, I got accepted to that workshop. And this is what changed my life, Doug. Because in that workshop, they taught us all the techniques of the Stanislavski method in acting, where you have to use your imagination to walk in your character's shoes. You have to imagine all of the given circumstances of your character's life. And you have to live into those circumstances. You have to open your heart and your mind and your body to imagine what it's like to live in that person's shoes. And what that does is, what that process does is it teaches you compassion, right? Because you have to really try on that individual and see what it would be like to be that person. Well, here's what happened. I was young. I think I was like 25. I was 25 years old, long blonde hair, you know, and they cast me in this play called The Women by Claire Booth Luce. The role they cast me in was the young, bombshell, husband-stealing, manipulative, lying, cheating character named Crystal. Well, let me tell you what happened. I'm reading the play, right? Now remember who I am. I'm raised in the Christian faith. I'm a good girl, right? I didn't mess around. I was clean cut, you know, good little church girl. And here I'm going to have to play in this play. I'm going to have to play the role of Crystal, who seduces and steals somebody else's husband. And the scene they wanted me to do was, you know, having this seductive scene with this man. Everything in the character of Crystal was opposite of who I was, who I am. I remain that person today. But right. I did not understand her. And guess what? I did not like her. I did not like Crystal. It's like, she's terrible. I had all this judgment. What a terrible person. She's not nice. She's not trustworthy. You know, all the elevated values that I celebrated, this woman did not have. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? So, but here's what happened. I entered into the training, the mechanisms that they gave us, right? I had to really imagine with my heart open what made her do these things. And you know what? There was a moment when I had an epiphany. Something in me understood what motivated her. And I had compassion. I had appreciation. I fell in love with Crystal for the humble human person, the flawed individual that she was. And I was able to play that character fully, without apology, without judgment. And here was the lesson, Doug. Here was the lesson. As I experienced that heart-opening compassion for her, I was deeply moved. And I went, wow, my whole perspective about this individual has transformed 180 degrees. I've gone from hating her to appreciating and loving her. And guess what I saw in that discovery? I went, holy smoke, this is what Jesus asked us to do, to have that kind of compassion, that kind of appreciation, even for the people that you don't like, to have that appreciation for your enemies. You know, he says, pray for your enemies. Can you have that kind of compassion, even for the people that you don't like? And at that moment, it was such a huge moment in my own development. I went, oh my gosh, this work in the theater, this radical practice of compassion, that's what acting is. I said, I don't want to just teach this. I need to dedicate my life to this practice, to the radical practice of compassion and understanding and actively loving and caring for others. So by golly, I did not waste a second. I dove fully into the work of the theater, and I wanted to be excellent in my craft. Well, guess what skills you need if you're going to be a really good actor?
Okay.
You've got to know how to stand up straight. You've got to be able to look somebody in the eye. You've got to be able to listen. You need to breathe deeply so that your voice can be heard in a large theater. You also need to understand how to project your voice and how to bring your own passion into your speaking so that your voice has a natural expression in it, right? You can tell, can't you, when somebody means what they say. The voice comes up, it comes down, it has color, it has life to it. And in addition to all of those physical behaviors, you've got to have the mind, the intellect to understand the world of the character's play. So there's a lot of learning. Every time you do a play, you've got to learn what the world of that play is like. You've got to understand all of the circumstances that create the culture, the value systems, the challenges that the people who live in that culture experience. What are their, what are the ways that they celebrate? What are the ways that they move through difficulty? You have to understand all of that. So you need a, you need a sharp intelligence, and then you've got to have that open heart, the open heart to be curious, to bring innate open curiosity, to learn. And I just think that the combination of that radical compassion that acting invites us to, combined with my spiritual journey, that was, that really helped me. And I got to tell you, you know, the work that I do, I've trained over 20 years. I've been a trainer and a coach. And I think that I have worked with, well, you know, including my educational experience as a teacher, I think I've worked with over 20,000 people. And you know what?
My word.
I like pretty much everybody. It's very rare, almost never, almost impossible for me to come across somebody that I don't like. And if I don't like them, I know it's because I'm seeing something in them, in myself. I know I'm projecting something about myself in them, and I can own that. And that, and that, and that transmutes my opinion of them into a positive one.
What a background you have had.
Fun.
I have to point out, it's just really amazing. I also note that, you know, you have been the executive director of a modest family foundation. The result of that has taken you all over the world. You know, Sierra Leone in West Africa and many of Nicaragua. Keep going. This is long.
Yes.
Your background is unreal, unreal. I must say to you, I think you're doing things now and you never in your wildest dreams thought you were going to be doing when you were back in school, you know, in college, in the early part of your career.
That is
Am I right?
But you are absolutely correct, Doug. I could not have predicted this. I could not have imagined it. And especially when it came to writing the book, writing my book, I didn't know I was going to do that. But you know what? It was a calling. It was a calling. I kept getting this instinct, this thing. It wouldn't leave me alone. It kept tapping me on my head, tapping me on my shoulder, tapping me on my heart. Write a book. Write a book. So many people told me over my life, you got to write a book. You got to write a book. And, you know, finally, just recently, I went, okay, I'm going to accept that invitation. I'm going to write this book. I never thought I was going to do that. I didn't know I was going to be doing radio programs with you, of all people. You, who's one of the masters of media.
Well, don't say that. It's interesting, though. You mentioned the Thornbirds, the author of the Thornbirds. Do you remember who it was?
No, I don't remember the author.
You know, I'm in the same boat. I interviewed her in my years at WTOP in Washington, where I spent 10 years.
No way.
And she came to Washington. You know, the book was a really big bestseller. And I have a signed copy in my library. I wish I could see it right now. Her name is not on the tip of my tongue. Anyway.
It became a great movie, too, with Richard Kildare, who played the role of the priest.
Chamberlain, wasn't he? Richard Chamberlain, right? Yeah.
Richard Chamberlain, that's right. He played Dr. Kildare. That's why I was confused.
Exactly right.
Richard Chamberlain. Exactly.
Listen,
thank you,
Carol,
for the correction.
I'm really supposed to be talking to you about Langford leadership, but we haven't gone into that. Tell me briefly about your background. It's so extraordinary. It's fascinating. I love hearing stories like what you've been telling us. But tell me
briefly
about Langford leadership. You know, you're such a highly qualified executive coach now. What do you think makes you so unique as an executive coach? We've already heard it, quite frankly. You love doing this?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I do. This is a huge passion, and I do love it, because every time I get to coach someone, or every time I get to teach a class, or every time I'm delivering a keynote presentation, it's a different group of people, and it's a wonderful opportunity to discover the human condition even more. But I'll tell you, with the executive coaching, I'm extremely fortunate. I was employed and am now a contractor with Korn Ferry International. They're a premium brand organization. And
for sure,
the gift of working with that organization is it introduces me to some premium brand companies in the world. So I work in the big tech sector a lot. a number of the executives that I coach are elevated leaders in big tech, in finance, in pharmaceutical, in consulting, you name it. And boy, oh boy, these are people whose decisions are having a transformational impact on our world, on our country, on our world, and on their industries. So it is a massive privilege. And here's what I've discovered as I work with people. All of them have a deeply held aspiration to make a transformational difference with their teams, with their companies, by having a fantastic impact in the world, a salutary, transformational, positive impact in the world. I can say that about all of the leaders that I've worked with. They're smart and they're driven. They're driven by making a positive difference and doing right by the people that they serve. And this is a centerpiece of my company. I talk about values-based leadership, values meaning we want to make a positive difference, and we want to do that by bringing respect, generosity, appreciation. We want to bring a diligence into the work that we do, the skills that we have. So we want to be knowledgeable. We want to be excellent in the various skills that we bring to leadership. And within those values, we can enhance the relationships that we have. You know, nobody does anything alone. And this is a time in the world when, you know, in the old days, the mid-20th century, you know, the CEO of the company was supposed to have all of the answers. And it was a hierarchical organizational structure that created the initiative. But now we understand that the organizational structure is much flatter. We have to work more collaboratively. Change is happening so quickly, and many of the executives that I have coached are driving that change. To have leaders that are grounded in elevated values that serve the human condition and are skillful in the relationships, in the way that they conduct themselves in relationship to their teams, to the people they manage, to the people they report to. When we're creating a positive relational environment so that teams and organizations, and I've worked with startups, I've worked with nonprofit organizations, all the way up into the Fortune 10.
Yep.
When people are intentionally focused and they're equipped with those values and with those relationship building skills, man, and then the intention to make a difference, combined with an appreciation for neuroscience and how the brain helps us accomplish what we do. When you put all that together, man, I mean, there's really not much that we cannot do. So
Carol,
I really see the corporate platform as a great place to make a difference.
I hate to interrupt you. I could go on for an hour more with you. Listen, I just want to point out to anybody who wonders, what's the background of a really highly qualified, well, either the fire department or the cop coming by right now. Sorry about that.
It's Brooklyn.
You can't avoid that.
It's Brooklyn.
Listen, thank you for
Help
taking
the
time.
Way.
I want to point out, you have written a great book. It's called The Speed of Passion, How Relationship-Based Leadership Drives Innovation. And Carol Langford has been our guest. Let me point out her website. If you want to learn more about Carol and her company, it's langfordleadership.com. Carol, thank you for giving us a peek into the background of someone like you who works with so many highly qualified people and what your background brings to help them. Obviously, you are you're a remarkable lady. Thank you so much. It's been a great having you as a guest. Okay. We gotta go. Okay.
My privilege and delight. Take care. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
We sure do. I'm Doug Llewellyn, everybody. Carol Langford, again, her website is langfordleadership.com. Thank you so much for being with us. Have a great day. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Hey, Carol, you were great. That was wonderful. Sorry, we ran out of time. Damn, you know, the clock screws us up sometimes. I thought so, yeah, and I thought you were just so great in telling some of those stories. That's wonderful material. We don't normally hear that kind of thing, you know, from people like you. I wish I'd had the chance to answer you, you know, some more questions. I wanted to know if you're ever intimidated yourself, you know, with some of the people who come in looking for you to help them, you know. No. Are you intimidated by them?
Oh.
Good.
Okay, I'm respectful.
Good.
Right? I mean, I've worked with some pretty serious...
I know that.
Major influence. And sometimes I get a little... I get butterflies in my stomach, but you know what? I just go, no, there's a reason why I'm meeting this person.
Yeah.
There's a reason why we're having this conversation.
Right.
I'm going to know that there's purpose in this, and I trust that purpose. And I just put my service hat on. I just power and the influence that they have. But I also trust that there's a reason why I'm having that conversation. And you know what? A lot of people select me. And I don't know. I guess it's because of this very background and all the mechanisms that I bring into the conversation. And I'm a good listener. I'm a good listener. I love business. I love this as a platform for societal transformation and human evolution. So there's a lot that we have, you know, I have a comment. And I, you know what, I'm also intentional. I say the right. I say right, capital L, then the people that I'm meant to work with. And if I'm not, if somebody else...
God, it was such a treat for me to talk to you, really. I have to ask you another question. You're an ordained minister. Were you ordained by the Universal Life Church? Okay.
No.
Okay.
There's something called the Center for Soulful Living. So, again, it's interfaith.
Yes,
it
yes, yeah.
Honors all of the spiritual traditions. Yeah.
Well, I only ask you that because one time when I was at WTOP, I interviewed the guy who had founded the Universal Life Church, which is still out there. His name was Kirby Hensley. I'll never forget his name. He ordained me on the telephone. Honest to God, he did.
Wow. You must have a very interesting...
It's very interesting. Not as spiritual as yours, but I mean, you know, I grew up in the Episcopal Church. I grew up on the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and then came to Washington. It was a wonderful area to grow up in, quite frankly. Yep, down on the Chesapeake Bay, the banks of the Chesapeake. You're absolutely right. What did you do in Baltimore? You saw something in Baltimore about your background. Yeah. Oh, okay, good, great. You are so highly qualified for what you're doing. It's such a treat to talk to you. Thank you for telling, okay? You know, just... Yeah. Well, great. Thank you so much, Carol. Good luck. Maybe we'll do this again sometime. Who knows? Okay?
Oh, I would love that.
Anyway.
I would really, really love that. And I hope you let me know what their thoughts are.
Okay. I'll make sure they get in touch. Okay? Thank you. All right. Have a wonderful day, Carol. Take care.
Delight to work with you. Thank you,
ma'am. Bye-bye.
Okay.